Hey everyone, I'm your host Tom Shaughnessy and welcome back to Chain Reaction, a research-driven podcast that's a part of Delphi Digital. If you're not on Delphi's research portal, you're missing out on the critical analysis read by the top minds in the crypto space, so be sure to check it out. One quick housekeeping item, nothing said on this podcast is a solicitation to buy or sell any security or token or to make any financial decisions. I may personally hold tokens mentioned on the podcast, and you can view our show notes below for our complete disclosures. With that, let's jump into the episode. Hey everyone, welcome back to the podcast. I'm your host, Tom Shaughnessy. Today I have on Teddy and Jeff from Notional Finance. Teddy and Jeff, how's it going?
It's going really well.
Great.
How are you, Tom?
Awesome, guys. Thanks for, I'm doing good and thanks for hopping on. Teddy, let's start with you. Give us your quick background and then we'll go over to Jeff.
Sure thing. So my quick background is I started my career as a trader. I traded interest rate swaps at Barclays. So I worked in an investment bank for about 3.5 years after I graduated college. And then after that, you know, I was getting a little bit bored at a bank and I decided to jump into crypto kind of in 2018 and traded crypto for about 1.5 years. And then towards the end of that, you know, I really wanted to start a company and I thought DeFi was just like really cool. And so I saw Compound, which was sort of rising to prominence at the time. And to me, that was really interesting because it was sort of the first step in a real interest rate market on chain. And, you know, I thought that that was just like a perfect like an enormous opportunity and a perfect opportunity for me, given my background. And so I felt that, you know, the logical next step for DeFi was going to be the ability to lend and borrow at fixed rates of interest. Because everything at the time was just variable. So, you know, I came from traditional finance. I knew how big fixed rates were. And so I figured, all right, this is going to be a huge thing. And basically, I was working in London and I moved to San Francisco to try and start this company. And I met Jeff the first day I landed there. And we've been working together ever since.
Yeah, that was a great first meeting. Where did you guys meet?
Jeff, you wanna tell the story? I think he's a little better.
So we met at the SF Blockchain Week Hackathon. That was, I think, the one in late 2019. It was sponsored by Cosmos, and yeah, I was there. So at the time in 2019, just a little bit about my background. So I've been here in the Bay Area since 2011, working in tech. So largely doing like product management or engineering management for like distributed systems and big data and data science, things of that nature. I got into crypto in 2014. One of the engineers on my team was like, just kind of always had like GDAX up and was like, just kind of constantly trading Bitcoin and maybe not working as much as he should. But we just like got into like talking about Bitcoin and I was like, okay, this sounds like super interesting, but you know, didn't really understand what the use case was. But I kind of kept up with the tech and kept up with Ethereum. 2017, I read the Maker white paper, which is really kind of what kind of clicked on the light bulb for me, because that was just sort of like the first, I felt like the first kind of real use case for like building like a financial system on this sort of like kind of distributed network, right? So fast forward to 2019, I took a job at Splunk, which is kind of a large data platform, data analytics company here in the Bay Area. And I was the product manager for their blockchain team. So I spent most of 2019 kind of talking to a lot of corporates, talking to like people sort of all across the spectrum, just around blockchain in general. And, you know, one of those things was going to a lot of conferences. So I was at SF Blockchain Week at the hackathon, just sort of milling about, just seeing what people were up to. And it was sort of like the beginning of the hackathon, and you know, I think Teddy was saying that, you know, he kind of, you know, we were just kind of looking for things to do, I guess. And he asked me if I had any ideas. So I said, you know, I've been thinking about, you know, this compound thing. And, you know, I don't really know anything about finance and stuff, but I think fixed rates, you know, I think that's something that people might really like. It's Teddy's got eyes got really big because, you know, that was sort of his thing, right? So, you know, from there, I just felt like we worked really well together, you know, just from the beginning. Like, we were just very, like, I felt very, like, very honest with each other, because Teddy would be like, no, that's stupid. That's not how traders would see, like, something like this. And I would be like, well, you really can't do that on a blockchain, you know, like, there's all kinds of limitations. And so I just felt like we had this really good working relationship, because there was, you know, we could kind of fill in the gaps of each other's knowledge. So, yeah, since then, it's been a great working relationship.
No, that's awesome. Being able to be honest and candid as co-founders is like one of the major checkbox items for a successful team. So that's great to hear. Guys, let's do the quick elevator pitch on what notional finance is. I know we've been throwing around fixed rates and things like that, but it would be great to just hear an overview, and then we'll go into the specifics throughout the podcast.
Yeah, and actually, sort of before we move on, I was just going to say a little bit about Jeff. So, like, basically, I think it works really well because we're both kind of experts in what we do. And so when I say something really stupid, and from like a technical or engineering perspective, I like Jeff's able to call me out and I don't feel too bad because I also know something that he doesn't know. So it just works really well.
I'm sure you've gone through a lot of like long pitches with him or in your head, and then you talk to Jeff and first 30 seconds, he's like, no, we can't do that.
Exactly. Okay, cool. Yeah. So about Notional, what Notional does is it's fixed rate lending and borrowing of crypto on Ethereum. So you can kind of think about it like a fixed rate compound. So currently we support DAI, USDC, Ether, and Wrapped Bitcoin. What you can do is lend and borrow your USDC and DAI fixed using Ether and Wrapped Bitcoin as collateral. So that's what you can do today. And in the future, we'll be adding other currencies for lend, borrow, other collateral types, et cetera.
And you guys are live today, correct?
That's correct. So we launched in beta late last year. And this was sort of before we were audited. So our contracts were under audit at the time. And so we did kind of a, you know, what they call a guarded launch, right? And we had capped the loan sizes at $1,000. So it was mainly just like to give people a look at what we've built and sort of get people familiar with it, start talking about it. But just recently, we got our audit report back from Open Zeppelin. We're all clear. And so we have removed the caps and we're doing a full launch this week. We've got about $3 million in liquidity on the platform now, which means that you can borrow and lend in significant size. So you can borrow, for example, up to 300K USDC at less than 1% slippage. So you can borrow 300K USDC today, fixed, at less than 5% interest.
And Teddy, how does that compare to borrowing USDC on other platforms? Like, let's say Compound, let's say Aave, you know, maybe throw in a BlockFi there. I know there's a lot of competitors to kind of think through, but what are the key differences? I mean, the fixed rate is amazing, but is that a concern when we're talking about stable coins, or is that less of a concern? Just a quick question there.
Yeah, so I think it's definitely a concern, and you can absolutely see that over the course of the last month, right? So if you, for example, look at USDC borrowing rates on Aave, like because we've been in this bull market where people have been going a little crazy and trying to borrow to get leverage, I mean, borrow rates have just been extremely volatile. So they, on Aave, borrow rates twice over the past month went over 60% APY, right? 6-0. Jesus. Yeah. So it's pretty intense. I mean, if you look at the graph of borrowing rates, it's pretty crazy. And as a matter of fact, if you look at the stable borrow rate on USDC on Aave today, that's currently at like 18%. So, you know, like it's pretty, yeah, I would say that fixed rates are pretty attractive right about now.
Yeah, no, I was actually lending or supplying my USDC to Aave last week or this week, I believe. And I think the interest rates were over 30%. And I was like, wow, You know, I feel like I'm yield farming here, but it's stablecoin. And the, like, how exactly do you entice the other side of this, though? Like, it's fantastic for me to borrow at, you know, 4% fixed rate, get a ton of USDC. Like, there's so much I can do with that in DeFi and crypto. But how do you incentivize people to lend USDC at that rate? If you could, can you earn more somewhere else? I'm assuming you probably can. I'm not too sure.
Yeah, so what I would say is kind of two things. So given that we've just started, the 4% rates on our platform, I don't imagine they'll stay there forever, right? So I think that kind of, you know, maybe we can get into this a little bit, but when users borrow or lend on our platform, they change the interest rates. So right now, the interest rates are 4 to 5%, but as borrowers borrow that liquidity, those interest rates move up. So, you know, if people aren't willing to lend at 4%, and borrowers are willing to borrow at 4%, we would expect the interest rates to rise until kind of lenders are willing to lend. Now, what I would say, this sort of the pitch for fixed rate lending, I think it's that in the context of DeFi, you know, the kind of APYs that you're getting from lending on Compound or Aave or yield farming, they are, you know, they are extremely volatile as well. And so, you know, if you can get an attractive rate of return and fix that, I think that, you know, I think a lot of people would find that interesting from sort of a risk management perspective. Similarly to, you know, how if you're managing assets in sort of the traditional markets, you'd have some allocation to like risky stocks and some allocation to, you know, safe and kind of low yielding bonds. I would imagine sort of a similar effect here for lenders.
Makes sense. And how exactly do the rates, like, how are they decided? Because your site is super, like, refreshingly easy to use. Like, I'm on the borrow page. I threw in, you know, a 10,000 USDC borrow. I could see the rates for April and July, you know, around 4 to 5%. And then the collateralization, like, toggle is so easy. It's just low, medium, or high. I would be eager to learn, like, how the rates are computed and how the collateralization works as well and how liquidations work, I guess. So kind of a deep question there, but we could start at the first one.
Yeah, for sure, man. So I guess I would start by saying the core concept here is what we call Fcash. So Fcash tokens are, they're tokens that you can transfer and trade, and they are kind of like zero coupon bonds in that they are defined by a currency type and a maturity date. So for example, April 2nd, 2021 DAI tokens are Fcash tokens. Now, the thing that's special about those is that upon April 2nd, 2021, I can redeem one April 2nd, 2021 DAI token for one DAI on Notional. Okay, so you can think about Fcash as representing cash at a specific date in the future. So April 2nd, 2021 DAI represents DAI on April 2nd, 2021. Okay. And the way we achieve borrowing and lending fixed is by allowing you to trade between DAI today and DAI in the future on our sort of protocol liquidity pools. And so these are kind of Uniswap-like pools where you have DAI on the one side, April 2nd, 2021 DAI on the other side. And as people borrow and lend, the proportion changes and the interest rate changes as well. So just like a quick example, if you are a lender, what you're going to do is you're going to take your DAI, place your DAI into the pool and take out April 2nd, 2021 DAI, right? And the exchange rate at which you make that trade implies a fixed interest rate over that period of time. Does that make sense?
That's a great explanation. No, it definitely makes sense. I mean, you're basically getting, you know, you give 100 DAI, you're getting less than 100 DAI in Fcash. And as you approach the maturity date, you get back to your $1 fix and the difference imputes your interest rate. Is this all done in one pool for the different maturities or is this many pools or how does that work?
Yeah, so each maturity has its own pool.
Got it. Okay, that's pretty cool. That's awesome. And I guess my other question there, like, is there any thoughts on like fragmentation? Like if you have like a bunch of pools and stuff like that, or is that not really an issue for institutions if you have like set, you know, maturity dates every 3 or 6 months or something like that?
Yeah. So this is an interesting thing. So fragmentation is absolutely an issue. And it's one of the reasons why you can't have a liquidity pool every single day for 6 months, right? Like, that's not going to work. So, you know, essentially right now we are giving some menu of options, right? So you have two options, a 3 month and a 6 month. Now we will probably add in a 1 year maturity as well. But, you know, every maturity that you add does sort of increase the fragmentation of liquidity. So you have to be sort of judicious, right? You don't want to add too many maturities. And so you kind of have to balance around giving people choice versus fragmenting liquidity. And there's no mathematical answer that you can prove that this is the best thing to do. It's really sort of just empirical as the protocol progresses. But you know, an interesting thing that we're actually rolling out in V2 is the ability to trade dated Fcash. So basically, it's kind of an interesting thing, but you'll be able to trade to any idiosyncratic date and without having to fragment liquidity. So that's really interesting. We haven't totally figured out exactly how we're going to do this, but I know we're going to do it for V2. Stay tuned.
No, this is awesome. And Jeff, I promise I have a couple questions for you. Don't worry, but one more for you, Teddy. On the collateralization aspect, how exactly does that work? I mean, you could put up ETH or Bitcoin or wrap Bitcoin, which is awesome. You know, bringing Bitcoin also to DeFi is awesome. But how exactly does that work? Like, I see the slider, I can go low, medium, or high risk. Like, what exactly does that imply on getting liquidated?
Right. Okay. So the collateralization framework, the simple way to explain it is that it works a lot like compound, as does liquidation. So right now, our collateralization ratios are 140%, and we've set that conservatively. I think we can get that down. But right now, it's 140%. And what that means is that you need $140 worth of collateral to borrow $100. Right? So like, if you were going to deposit Ether to borrow DAI, for example, you'd need to, you know, if you had $1,400 worth of Ether on the platform, you could borrow up to 1,000 DAI, right? Or $1,000 worth of DAI. So in that sense, it works just like Compound or Aave, and the liquidation also works similar to Compound or Aave. So when you fall under collateralized, a liquidator has the opportunity to buy a portion of your Ether collateral at a discount to the Chainlink price. And by doing that, the liquidator brings your account back to healthy collateralization levels by essentially repaying some of your debt on your behalf.
It's awesome. It's a great explanation, Teddy. You got the pitch down. And Jeff, a couple questions for you here. How does all of this work, or what are the concerns like on the dev or smart contract side? Like, do you run into normal issues with, you know, if gas costs get too high, we can't get liquidations, or, you know, what are the technical hurdles in helping to code up Notional, and what were the, I guess, biggest achievements that you've seen from the team?
Yeah, so I think, you know, all the sort of normal kind of smart contract concerns apply here. You know, I would say coding Notional, like from the smart contract perspective, I think the way we've like built Notional is sort of the first thing that we wanted to do was make sure that all the users in the system got the most capital efficiency that we could possibly get them, right? And so there's a lot of things that come into play there that are sort of kind of in the weeds a little bit of how the protocol works, but provide a lot of efficiency gains, right? And this is kind of a lot of what, you know, Teddy has really been driving, you know, over the last years we've been developing this. So one example is when you provide liquidity in Notional, you provide it on leverage, right? I think Teddy can give a better explanation of what that means and kind of efficiency benefits there. But, you know, we also like when you're providing on leverage, we also like kind of account for all your positions in a portfolio, right? So we make sure that if you're lending in one currency, it gives some collateral benefit to, you know, another currency, and just kind of tracking all that, those kind of like, you know, debts and like sort of entitlements in the right way, and making sure that, you know, they're netting off properly. That was sort of like the big challenge around building Notional and the kind of smart contract system. And also, like, you know, I think just a little bit of a story. I think we were, we like our auditors had found like an issue that was sort of like seemed very innocuous to them, you know, like with like some sort of like bid in the liquidation mechanism that was like, you know, they thought like, oh, this is kind of weird, but maybe like a low priority issue. And, you know, Teddy and I tugged at the thread a little bit and like, you know, all of a sudden liquidation code went from like, you know, 300 lines to like 1300 lines, right? Which Teddy's laughing because that was like, that was a fun couple of days. But, you know, I think probably actually the thing I'm, you know, not only the smart contracts, but I'm really proud of is the website. You know, I think you mentioned like, it's really nice. It's really easy to use. We've worked with a design firm here in San Francisco. Like, I felt like that was very important because I've used DeFi protocols before. And I've just found that like, you know, it takes a big sort of leap of faith to like submit an Ethereum transaction to like something that, you know is sort of irrevocable. And I just felt like a system, you know, sort of as like a system with kind of all the little moving bits inside of it to kind of achieve the fixed rate like ours. I think we wanted to really make sure that we could expose as much like information and feedback to the user to give them like a good kind of like mental model of like what's going to happen to their money. Right. And I still think like from our user interviews, we know that there's still this like trust gap that we need to close. And maybe that just takes time and familiarity. But I am really proud of the like the way the designers kind of like made the website easy to use and like understandable and like presentable. Because I think that hopefully will go a long way to making people comfortable with the platform. Yeah.
Yeah. No, congratulations on the site. It's you know, if I'm here for 30 seconds, I know exactly how to lend, borrow, or provide liquidity. It's super simple. And when I click into lending or borrowing, it's really easy. So kudos to you guys. And that's totally what you want, which is great. I'm sure it wasn't easy though.
Yeah. And I would actually just jump in real quick here. So Jeff has like written every single line of the smart contracts. And I think he's not a guy that's going to go brag a bunch, but I think that, you know, I will say it for you. Obviously I'm not the technical expert, but I do know that like our last audit, they found zero exploits. And this is a sophisticated system, and Jeff wrote the whole thing, and I think it's pretty impressive. So,
Jesus, Jeff, that is impressive, man. You come on, man. You're on a podcast once; you're allowed to brag a little bit.
All right, yeah, I did a great job. It can get better, and you know, I think we're always looking for ways to improve this thing, and you know, I think, yeah. I don't really like to pat myself on the back too much. I think we can always do better here for sure.
That's a good mentality. So guys, we've went through Notional, how it works, your stories. Let's zoom back out for kind of the second half of the pod. Let's talk about like how Notional affects DeFi. Like, what do fixed rates offer for DeFi that, you know, we don't have today? Like, what use cases, what clients, what markets, what apps, like, what are you guys going to be the building blocks for within DeFi?
Yeah, I think that's a good question. So I guess what I would say is that, you know, if you want to zoom out and say kind of what broadly fixed rates enable, I think it's like in a broad sense, it brings mainstream users into DeFi. That's what I would say. It's like it's a pretty important building block that I think brings DeFi, allows DeFi to capture use cases that aren't exclusively focused on trading and speculation. I think that that's quite important. And that's like a really big step into making like DeFi a real financial system that is capable of catering to a more mainstream user, right? And if we want DeFi to succeed, that just has to be true, right? We have to be able to do that because there's only a very small minority of people in the entire world that are going to be kind of participating on these protocols and like actively yield farming and just like really getting into the weeds and reading the code. I mean, that is a very small minority of the global population. So in order for DeFi to succeed and sort of move past where it is today, we need to be able to sort of meet more mainstream users where they are. And, you know, fixed rates, I think, are a critical piece of doing this. And just so maybe like tangibly, you know, I think that we could see a future where, you know, fixed rates kind of cater to businesses. So miners and businesses. So, you know, if you're a miner today, you might want to borrow against your crypto instead of selling your crypto to invest in your hardware. And, you know, if you want to borrow on a term that's like, you know, if you want to borrow a year, a couple years, like the, you know, using borrowing rates that can spike to 70%, I mean, it's just like, it's just a non-starter, right? And like, I just think that, yeah, the longer that you borrow for, the more important fixed rates become, right? Because that the volatility of variable borrowing rates just compounds the further out you go. And so if we can like facilitate people borrowing for 6 months, a year, 5 years, I mean, we can like, you know, we can really start to match the capabilities of the traditional financial system. You know, we could see crypto projects, instead of having to sell down their treasury to finance their protocol operations, they can borrow against it, right? And they would do that if they were confident that the price appreciation on their treasury holdings would be greater than the interest rate they would pay on their loan, right? And like, so that's going to be like, that's something that traditional businesses do, right? So I think that that's, yeah, it's exciting. It like opens up kind of, you know, I would say, yeah, just a more mainstream class of use cases for DeFi.
Teddy, do you think that, I mean, in my mind, you guys are most well positioned to attract the institutional crowd. And I know, you know, I'm sure a million people have said that about a million projects, but you guys are offering like a traditional product to with a clean UI to traditional investors. Do you think that you guys will attract, you know, I don't know what the traditional target market here is. Maybe it's large macro funds that hold a lot of Bitcoin. Do you think that you'll attract those types of clients anytime soon, or do you think that's a little further out?
That's a good question. So we're currently sort of in conversations with those guys, and we sort of just kind of kicked those off. I think they're absolutely interested, and I think that is business that that we will capture in the future. I'm not, you know, I still think that ultimately they aren't going to be our first users, right? Because we're still like a new DeFi protocol, and this stuff is all a little weird to institutions still, right? And so we, you know, our first users are going to be people that are more comfortable and actively participating in DeFi today.
Awesome. That makes a lot of sense. I'm sure there's a lot of weird niche like DeFi products that can be built using fixed rates that we're kind of not thinking of right now, just on the fly. But I mean, there's just so much use case and speculation on apps and DeFi on different apps. Like, I'd be surprised if you guys weren't integrated into one of these projects just to make it simple for users.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, like, you know, we really look forward to, I mean, that's one of the great things about DeFi is sort of the community participation and the way that, you know, somebody else who's not a part of the team that we don't know at all can just take what we're doing and build something really cool with it. So, you know, we're really excited to see what people do.
Yeah, no, same here. And I guess what's on the roadmap for you guys? I mean, you know, you have the site up, you guys are launching, like, which is a huge feat in and of itself. But I guess what are you guys looking to add? What are you looking to build next? What's on the roadmap?
Yeah, so I would say that kind of the roadmap ahead here is the first step is sort of, you know, kind of growing Notional, growing our liquidity, growing our sort of underlying lending and borrowing usage, and just kind of raising awareness about what we have to offer. And then, you know, from a development standpoint, I mentioned that we're working on a V2. Now, there are some sort of features that we can talk about a little bit, others that, you know, we can't. But yeah, there's definitely going to be interesting stuff coming in V2. And, you know, one of those things is, like, I think that we can definitely talk about is our ambition to extend the maturity dates so that, like, you can actually borrow and lend for a year or 2 years at a time. You know, ultimately, I think our V2 is going to have the capability to have you borrow and lend for up to 10 years. Now, we don't anticipate doing that right away, but, you know, that's where we want to get to, right? And, So that's definitely like extending the available maturities for users is definitely something that we're looking forward to in the future.
That's awesome. And one thing I missed when we were talking earlier about the collateralization ratios, like I know you said 140% for you guys. It gets confusing when comparing to other platforms because some use like liquidity thresholds and maximum LTVs and things like that. But how do you guys compare on the collateralization ratio for like ETH to Compound or Aave? Like, can you borrow more against it? Do you guys have a higher or lower liquidity threshold? Like, how exactly does that play out?
Yeah, so I think we are roughly comparable to Compound. Now, Aave, I'm not entirely sure, but I believe we are roughly comparable to Compound. Although, what I would say on that note, Tom, is that we are also currently working with Gauntlet to optimize our kind of systemic risk parameters. Now, we launched with this 140% to be conservative, but I do believe that we are going to be able to get that down significantly. So I think that, you know, once we have a little bit more confidence that our liquidator ecosystem is healthy, I think that we should be able to get down to something like 120% collateralization, which would be better than Compound and would rival the OTC market. So I think that that's going to be significant. Yeah.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. And one thing we didn't talk about, we talked about lending, we talked about borrowing. You guys offer users the option to provide liquidity. What does that mean?
Right. So this is, I think this is like one of the more difficult things for people to get about Notional, because you have this, you know, when you think about lending products in DeFi generally, you have this mental model in your head where there's borrowers and there's lenders and that's it, right? And in our protocol, there's this third user type, the liquidity provider, which people can sort of commonly conflate with lenders, but they're actually two different people. So what I would say, the way to understand this is that our liquidity pools are not like Compound liquidity pools. They are like Uniswap liquidity pools. Okay, so the lender is the buyer of Fcash, the borrower is the seller of Fcash, and the liquidity provider on Notional does the same thing as the liquidity provider on Uniswap. So the LP just puts capital into the pools and earns trading fees every time a lender lends and a borrower borrows.
Got it. Okay, makes sense. This is awesome, guys. No, we covered a lot. It's great that you guys built this and launched it. I'm pretty excited. Is there anything that we missed that we forgot to cover today? I feel like we hit on a lot.
I think that's pretty good. I guess all I'd say is, you know, just kind of to hammer it home again, you know, right now on Notional, you can borrow up to 300K USDC at less than 5% interest rates. And if anyone wants to try the product, it's, you know, you can visit our website, notional.finance, or hop in our Discord and kind of talk to us.
Teddy, yes. I wish I had the collateral to do that right now and I would take it out, but a little low someday. But it's exciting. And guys, what about the broader team? Is it just you guys right now, or are you guys building up, or how's that looking?
Yeah, so it's two of us for now. We have some help on the website front. So like I mentioned, we have a design firm that we work with, and as well as a really great web developer that has like just kind of done a lot of the lift for like the visual stuff and just making it super responsive. I think we're adding more on the business side. So, you know, like Teddy mentioned, we're really trying to get awareness out there. And I think, you know, there's just a lot of sort of cold calling, you can call it, in DeFi to try to get people on the platform and using it. So, you know, I really think, you know, for the next few months here, it's going to be a lot of focus on just driving usage, driving adoption, and the marketing effort.
That's pretty cool. And the other thing, though, like every DeFi project has to create a community. They need to be on Discord all the time, adding new products, yada, yada, yada. And it's exhausting, obviously, for them. You guys really don't like need a community of to win, right? You guys just need to give the best rates and have a lot of liquidity, right? Like you don't technically need, you know, a Notional army per se, do you?
Well, it would certainly be nice. I'll tell you that. you know, it's a good question. I think that we very much intend, or, you know, the sort of design decisions that we've made, we're prioritizing sort of the economics of the system. So It's going to be the most efficient for LP capital. It's going to be the most efficient for borrowers. And part of that is the best rates, the least slippage. And so we've sort of, you know, designed for that. And I think if we can win there, we should be able to, you know, I mean, like ultimately, I think we should be able to win by winning on those qualities. But at the same time, I don't, you know, I don't want to like diminish the importance of community at all. I think that, you know, ultimately, it's risky trying a new DeFi protocol. And, you know, I think it's important for people to feel that they're kind of part of the team and they're part of something. And that's kind of what gets a lot of people over the line. And so I think that it's, you know, it's extremely important. Yeah, that people feel that they're part of a notional community. And so, yeah, so I don't want to, I guess I would say, I don't want to diminish the importance of that. And also people have really good ideas, you know, so like, you know, people in the Discord are raising interesting questions about kind of design decisions that we've made. And like, it's really helpful. Yeah.
Yeah, no, yeah, I totally agree with you. Community is extremely important. I just think it's good for you guys that, you know, you don't need like a million people to help you guys be successful. And one of my last questions for you, Teddy, Jeff, how do you guys make money here? Like, are you earning a part of the spread? Are there fees involved? How exactly does that model work to make sure that you guys have the resources to build this out for years to come?
Yeah, so what I can say is that, you know, we do not currently take a transaction fee. But that is a thing that could happen in the future, and that to sort of fund the, you know, the reserves for the protocol. So anytime someone loans or borrows, we could theoretically take a small fee. Yeah, but we do not currently do that.
Awesome. All right, cool. And for those who want to try the platform, what's the website address and how could they, you know, follow you guys and learn more and stay in touch?
Yeah, so it's notional.finance is the website. And you can follow us on Twitter. Our handle is @notionalfinance.
That's awesome, guys. Well, thanks so much for coming on such short notice. I know you guys are swamped launching this. This is awesome. I mean, I haven't heard fixed rate lending yet. I think you guys are the first guests on the topic. So really great to have you guys on. Congrats on the launch. And for everyone listening, all the links that Teddy and Jeff mentioned will be in the show notes. Thanks so much, guys.
All right. Thanks a lot, Tom.
Thanks for having us, Tom. Bye.
Hey everyone, thanks for listening to the podcast. If you enjoyed it, please support the show by hitting subscribe on iTunes, writing a review, or sharing this episode on Twitter and LinkedIn. And stay tuned for our next episode out soon.